This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 99 of the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me, as usual, is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
Bringing you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray and streaming media. And this week we're touching on a subject very dear to Richard Mine's heart, which is the 80s action genre with the documentary In Search of the Last Action Hero. Our short shot this week is going to be Mom Wars, and we're going to round off with a Kurt Russell starring Soldier in our DTV throwback. Yes, our first review is In Search of the Last Action Heroes, not hero, as I mentioned in the intro. This is a documentary which basically chronicles the era of the 80s and how the action genre sort of developed from the 70s into the 80s into the 90s. So director Oliver Harper manages to corral together quite a few decent names to interview throughout. He has the likes of Shane Black, for example, Scott Adkins, and many, many others. I think Brad Fidel's in there. Ronnie Cox, I thought he was very good, and Paul Verhoeven. So, you know, he's got some pretty big hitters in here, and he does a good job of, you know, outlaying sort of the 80s and what it meant to the action genre. What do you think, Rich?
Yeah, I think, there's a lot of people like us who, you know, grew up on 80s movies and whatever and have started, or even 70s, 60s, 70s, whatever, and they grow up and they want to tell the story of those movies that they love so much. So we're in a sort of a period now, you know, sort of the 2010s into the 20s now, that you're getting a lot of these documentaries chronicling various, you know, subgenres and such. So we've had, you know, things like the Canon Films documentary, Electric Boogaloo, and the same people did the Not Quite Hollywood and
the Australian one. Yep.
Yeah, what was it? And recently we had Iron Kicks. Iron, sorry,
yeah, Kung, that
what was
very
it?
Good.
What was it called again? Kung Fu Kick. Sorry, Iron Fists and Kung Fu Kicks. Yeah, sorry, I was just struggling with that. Sorry. And that was all about the martial arts influences and sort of martial arts genre and influences. And this is basically the same, but looking more broadly at the action genre as a whole. So touching on martial arts action as part of that, so you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme and Bruce Lee and that all getting mentioned. So this is trying to be much more comprehensive and looking at the specific and drawing it, sort of drilling in specifically at the 1980s and, you know, muscles and Stallone and Sly and all that kind of thing and what happened from there and how we ended up with DTV action, like with the likes of Cynthia Rothrock and more recently Scott Adkins. And I thought it was really good. I always enjoy these films. They're always well put together. They're all different. They've got their own stylistic thing. But, you know, there's a reminiscence and a nostalgia to them. There's lots of trivia and sort of interesting stories. The interview subjects are always really, you know, diverse and broad. Yeah. You know, you've got your notable absences, but I mean, the cast list's brilliant. I mean, you've mentioned, a good number of them, but there was also, you know, Stephen E. D'Souza was one of my favourites.
Yeah.
Boaz Davidson and Sam Furstenberg, Matthias Hughes, and some sort of Mario Casar. I think he passed away recently, didn't he?
Michael D. Woods, was it? The guy who wrote The Good, the Bad, and the... what it's called now.
Oh yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, so we got I can't remember, but Philip Ree from Best of the Best of the Best series, and him saying, you know, he was offered the chance to do the Best of the Best 3 and 4, you know, write, direct, star himself and everything. And it might even be the case still that he's the only Asian to have done that, you know, to write, direct and star in movies or more than one film.
You know, he's obviously proud of the fact, but also kind of
said it was such a, you know, shame.
Yeah, exactly.
Michael Jai White had a lot to say. And Vernon Wells in there. Even Alex Winter, who had a small role in Death Wish 3. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. Eric Roberts, Peter MacDonald, who did Sheldon Message. So Al Leong, who was the ultimate henchman.
The ultimate henchman for everything. Yeah.
Who's fantastic. And if you haven't seen the documentary Henchman, go and look that one up on Amazon. He's contributing as well. The only thing, sort of my only gripe with it was the title, because I didn't think the project, the film, matched the title. It says it's In Search of the Last Action Heroes.
Where are they? They're not there.
Well, I didn't get the sense of any kind of. I mean, I know in the making of the project that might be what they were setting out to do.
Yeah.
But the film is not structured in any sort of going on a mission or seeking out or whatever. It is literally a narrative, you know, follow through from the beginning of, you know, the humble beginnings of how we ended up, you know, starting out with Westerns and stuff, developing into the action genre and following through. But a more throwaway title like the Kung, you know, Iron Fists and Kung Fu Kicks, which doesn't mean anything. It's just catchy.
Yeah.
It's just broad.
Yeah.
I think a title like that would have fitted this better because, you know, this kind of going in search of kind of had a feeling like almost like a Morgan Spurlock or something.
Yeah.
You know, somebody putting themselves in and saying, look, I'm going out, I'm trying to find these people and interview them and all this sort of stuff. And you just don't get that. So that is, as I say, it's a very minor gripe than what is otherwise a pretty comprehensive, it's well over 2 hours, like 2 hours, 20 minutes long.
It is very long. The only time I felt the film sort of lost momentum was when the Last Action Hero segment, when he had like Shane Black and this other guy who had written the original.
Zach Penn.
Yeah, Zach Penn had written the original script. And it kept sort of going backwards and forwards between these two, saying how good their version was and then how rubbish the other version was and things like that. And, you know, they'd edit it in such a way so that they weren't they're not exactly contradicting each other, but it was definitely a case of they've got their own version of the truth sort of thing. But I just thought that whole thing just went on a bit too long and they were sort of focusing on one film too long. If you want to focus on a film like that, go to True Lies, please, you know.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. They definitely sort of tried to. It definitely went down a few avenues.
Yeah.
You know, like talking about Rambo 3, for example, some of the troubles on that film and how Peter MacDonald ended up directing it.
I remember Russell Mulcahy starting out on that film. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, no, I remember that. Yeah, I managed to see that one on the cinema, and I remember there was, you know, the bit where he has to cauterize his own wound, and he puts the gunpowder into the hole, as it were. Right. And there's this couple sitting in front of us, and this woman sort of going, "What's he doing? What's he going to do?" I'll tell you what, this really made me hankering for was to see Best of the Best again.
Yeah, I do. I haven't seen. I'm not actually that familiar with the first one. I think I remember the second one more because of Ralph Moller and Wayne Newton and stuff. Well,
yeah, I saw the second one in the cinema.
It's actually the third and fourth that I've seen the most.
I haven't seen either of them. In fact, it was only recently I realised that they actually made a sort of third and fourth. I've seen the trailers for them, but I've never actually sort of come across the films at all.
Oh, number 3 came out on it was notable for like a really obvious excised sequence. There was like an attack sequence that was very, you know, clearly just, it sort of goes from one thing to another and it was like really jarring. Yeah. So that's like it was quite good because they had Gina Gershon in it. But number 4 really felt like a TV movie. That had Ernie Hudson, but they were, you know, they have, you're worth seeing because Rhee is really good. And I think he did probably the best job he could, you know, sort of running with that franchise by himself. But the say the first two were very much on, you know, that ensemble, you know, got Chris Penn and Eric Roberts sort of, that sort of like the main guys in there. But yeah, they're very, I think they're definitely worth a revisit.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I mean, Best of the Best got just, you know, the end segment is just brilliant. And if you're not crying at the end of it, you're just not a man, basically. How are we going to score In Search of the Lost Action Heroes?
I mean, despite a very minor misgiving about the title, it's a 9 out of 10 for me.
I think it's... I got to give it an 8. I mean, one of the other things I liked about this was the amount of clips from trailers. And what you realise is that they, you know, it's the deep voice trailer guy for every single one. Every single, you know, every single action movie that came out in the 80s and early 90s.
Well, most of them were Don LaFontaine. He's like the guy.
Yeah.
He was the man.
Absolutely.
There's a few rounds still doing it, aren't there? That same style, but yeah, the love all that so much of the time. Yeah. And you know, I loved how in the film they touched upon the Canon logo and how iconic that was. And absolutely, you know, I feel the same way. You know, it's a brilliant logo. Sort of, you love, you know, when you went to the cinema. I mean, I used to go to Canon cinemas, so they would show the Canon logo with everything. So you know, on the video and whenever I watch anything now, it's the most evocative logo. I think, you know, out of all the, you know, even more than Warner Brothers or Paramount or anything, for me, it just that tells
you know what you're getting, doesn't
it? Yeah, it sets up a feeling. It's got that wonderful music and stuff. And I like the fact that they sort of made little diversions to talk about little touches, little things like that. But there was so much more they could, you know, talk about.
Yeah, I mean, they touched on the DTV genre, you know. Eric Roberts had a good comment where he says, like, you know, sort of like from the late 70s up to the early 80s, if your film went straight to video, it's a sign of failure. But then, sort of like from the sort of mid 80s onwards, films are being made, you know, specifically to go to video, which is really interesting as well.
Yeah, and you got Cynthia Rothrock sort of speaking about her bits and you know, showing lots of clips of her, and it's just making me think, really got to go back and visit some Cynthia Rothrock.
Yeah, they barely touched on Jackie Chan and John Woo, you know, or a bit more on John Woo than Jackie Chan, even, I think.
But what I thought was interesting was that the Iron Fists and Kung Fu Kicks, I don't think, mentioned Jean-Claude Van Damme. There was like a moment in passing. But in this one, there's quite a lot about Jean-Claude Van Damme. You know, they talk about Street Fighter and you know, lots of different little blood sport and how Manahum Golan apparently didn't like the film. And, you know, it was on the shelf.
Well, had to have it recut and everything before it got...
Yeah, and so there's quite a lot of that. What they did, but who they don't really mention in this one is Steven Seagal, who gets like a little passing mention and then like a little bit more of a mention just towards the end.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, he wasn't a trailblazer, you know. Kind of he came on the back of Chuck Norris, who they focused on more. So that's kind of fair enough, really. But you can't. There's so much, you know, there's a reason why so many books have been written already about various aspects of the action genre that, you know, that you can't even at this film's very generous 2 hours, 20 minute running time, you just can't touch it all. But I think this does a very, very good job of it.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Our short shot this week is Mum Fight. In this one, set during the Christmas holidays, two well-meaning mums fight over the last Captain Dynamite toy in a toy store. What goes from sort of passive-aggressive sort of taunting ends up in a sort of full-out brawl between these two women. Which, for me, this sort of trod familiar ground to the film that J.D. Duffield did, that we saw at the Fighting Spirit Film Festival, which was 10 minutes.
Two minutes for a pound. Yeah.
Similar sort of setup, you know, sort of two women sort of bickering, which sort of develops into something more serious. Except in this case, you know, they've got the the whole of the toy store to sort of play with, as it were. So, you know, props and things sort of come into play. It is very well choreographed and put together. I can't deny that. And I really like the snarky sort of shop assistant. I thought that bit was really, really funny. And the payoff, it was you know, the climax of the film was for me, it was either going to go one of two ways. And I was kind of happy with the way it ended out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that the 10 minutes for a pound comparison is basically exactly the same film with a different setting and a slightly different setup. But the one's Asian, one's Caucasian. Yeah. You know, is the dynamic is basically the same. So. But I did prefer this, I have to be honest. I thought the concept was dealt with much better. Although, this is basically Jingle All the Way.
It is. It's Jingle All the Way, sort of condensed into 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It is that format. I mean, and even that was sort of born out of sort of, you know, the true life thing with it, with the Cabbage Patch dolls, wasn't it? You know, I remember seeing on the news sort of like the people literally fighting over sort of Cabbage Patch dolls in American sort of superstore, you know, toy stores and things, and snatching the last one out of some little girl's hand and running to the till with it. Yeah, that sort of thing. So yeah, people get a bit crazy, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I would say I think it's completely coincidental that 10 Minutes for a Pound and this ended up having essentially the same content. They clearly were in production around the same time, and it's very unlikely that they had anything.
I don't think any
sort of, and it would have been aware of each other. And they're both good films. Even though 10 Minutes for a Pound, I think, is a bit more original than this one, being, say, it's that Jingle All the Way sort of copy. I did enjoy this a lot more. I think as you say, it's having that whole store environment to play with. It's got a nice, it's got a proper narrative. It's like beginning, middle, and an end. The characters are set up in the beginning, or at least one of the main characters is set up, introduced, talking on the phone and stuff, and establishing how much he wants to get this toy and the difficulties of Christmas. And then they get into the store, and there's lots of props in play. There's, you know, the little pauses aside, you know, it's a sketch, it's a, not sketch, it's like a Tom and Jerry cartoon, you know, it just sort of takes it different directions.
The other bit I liked as well was the little girl watching.
Yeah. Yeah, she was cute.
The smile on her face as she's watching these two women.
Crunching on a little couple of crisps.
Which I just thought was really, really funny. But yeah, as I said, the snarky shop assistant who's like just so pissed off with having to work the Christmas holiday period. You know, his greeting when she comes in is like, "Welcome to the toy store."
He really doesn't want to be there, and he's not really bothered. The cast were really good. I'm not familiar with any of them or from what they've done. The director is Mickey Finnegan, I believe, who's done quite a few shorts. Over the last he seems to have been making shorts for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the fight choreography was by a guy called Christopher Troy, who seems to do a huge amount of TV work, stunt work and stuff, for a lot of TV programs like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff.
Got a lot of good experience.
And I think this might be like the first time he's had a choreography credit that I can see. So it's quite a good showcase for what he can bring to a project, I think. It's what, 12 minutes long, this film, you say?
Exactly. So, you know, you can easily sort of fit this into your lunch hour, basically.
Brilliant. Lovely cinematography, widescreen shot. Very, very well read. Very highly recommended.
Absolutely. Yeah, go check it out. This is available on YouTube. We'll put the link sort of below, so check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is Soldier, directed by Paul Anderson, or Paul W.S. Anderson, as he was later known. Kurt Russell stars as Todd. He's part of an elite fighting unit, trained and conditioned from birth. However, he is bested by a new breed of soldiers who have been genetically grown and enhanced. He's left for dead on a planet used as a garbage dump. taken in by a community of survivors of a spaceship crash and trying to eke out a peaceful existence in this hostile environment. Unfortunately for everyone involved, his old unit, the replacement unit, come visiting on a sort of a military exercise. So I was a bit sort of like surprised you picked this in a way, because I'm thinking, this is a big budget movie. Why are we doing this on the DTV Digest? And then I remembered something right at the back of my brain that this didn't actually get a cinema release, did it?
Absolutely. No, this was probably
like
the most
expensive DTV movie at the time.
Yeah. $60 million action movie, huge cast. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, I think it underperformed in America and they just lost faith with it and they decided to just put it out on DVD, because DVD was just coming out. And so,
yeah, I think the visuals didn't help, because, you know, they're setting on a garbage planet. So it's just like, it didn't have a particularly appealing look to it, unfortunately.
I think possibly the fate, I don't know, because obviously they, Warner Brothers, who made this, also did The Postman, which I think was, I don't know if that was a few years earlier or was it around the same time, but I don't know if that was any kind of factor, because that was a big failure as well.
It was a huge failure, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't think this is a failure at all. I mean, the fact that it went DTV was a shame. But for me, as a young guy who'd just got my hands on a DVD player, because they were just coming out, this was one of the first films released on DVD, if I can recall. So you didn't have to wait, go and rent it. You could just buy it and take it home. I could just watch it as much as I wanted on my widescreen TV. It just looked amazing. I thought I was a big fan of Paul Anderson already because of Event Horizon. So I love the cast. You know, Kurt Russell, Jason Scott Lee, Gary Busey, Connie Nielsen, Sean Pertwee, who I really like as this. You know, we're going to talk more and more, over the next few minutes and that. But, I love this film to bits.
Yeah, I do enjoy this a lot. Kurt Russell in particular is great. I mean, he got into such a good shape for this film. I mean, he trained out a lot, lost
18 months. Yeah. He trained for 18 months ever since he finished Breakdown.
Yeah, and he looks absolutely superb in it. And, he plays this guy. This soldier has been trained and conditioned from birth. He's the best of these sort of, these soldiers. They have, we have a brilliant montage sequence at the beginning, sort of showing his growth and his abilities, and the fact that he's completely ruthless. If some enemy soldier happens to take a hostage, he's not got no qualms about killing the hostage to get to the enemy soldier.
He's had his humanity completely suppressed.
He has,
there's no, he's just literally from birth, kill environment. The thing is, coming at this so many years later, you kind of see things that you didn't see in it before. Like the whole, when they're being, when they're school children, basically, and they're learning about stuff. It's all, the A to, there's like an alphabet that's around the top of the ceiling, and it's all like aggressive language.
Oh, right.
H is for her, or stuff like that. Yeah. And this kind of indoctrination that's happening, it makes you think of the way the children in North Korea are being raised, to how many American bastards would you have to kill to do this, that, or the weird sort of indoctrination of violence that country in particular has. But also in this case, even though it starts in 1996, because it was made in 1998, but starts in 1996 with birth of the babies and that, there's a very fascist dimension to it. So it's like it's not like it's looking at the future. It's like almost like an alternate present.
Yeah.
It's like, what if it's almost like in Starship Troopers, how Casper Van Dien and that, they're the heroes, but the senior figures are all dressed as, they're the Nazis. Yeah. So this is kind of setting a similar kind of landscape. So they're carrying this flag, which has got, I think it says American forces, and then like the equivalent in Spanish underneath. with like this lightning bolt. And you see that logo on the flag that Todd, in the point where he's being played by Kurt Russell's son, and he's carrying it along, and you see it then. And you also see the same logo in the training area, the hangar bit, I think when they're training later. So clearly nothing's really changed. You know, this military, hold on. I don't know. It's a very sort of interest. It's not explored, which is a real shame. But there's a whole kind of fascist element to it. Like, I don't know if that was suppressed in the script or it was an early draft of the script, and they just kind of kept a little bit of it. But it's quite nice to go back, and you're watching all the great scenes that you remember, like Jason Scott Lee turning up, all looking like Dwayne Johnson does, basically. If that was being made now, he was massively bulked up. Yeah. They have that chain fight and all that, all the classic scenes that you remember, but you're seeing a bit more of it.
So, I mean, there's a couple of things. There's the one bit of trivia that everyone knows about Soldier, and that is its link to Blade Runner.
Yeah, I don't know what a spinner is. So everyone says, "Oh, there's a spinner," and I was like, "I don't know what a spinner is."
It's not that. When
Tannhauser Gate and all that.
Yeah, you get a scene with Todd's military history and listing all the conflicts he's been involved in, and there's two. There's the Tannhauser Gate and the Shoulder of Orion, which are two bits which come up in Rutger Hauer's speech in Blade Runner. You know, I've seen things you'll never imagine, all that sort of stuff, which is really cool. My favourite bit of acting in this film is from an actor called James Black, who plays Riley. He's one of the soldiers in Todd's unit. And it's quite late in the film where the female second-in-command is sort of telling them what their mission is. And by this stage, these guys have been sort of relegated to being like the caretakers, and and sort of Riley sort of goes, "Oh, so do we get weapons?" And they're like, "No, only soldiers get weapons." Yeah. And you can just see the heartbreak in his eyes. Yeah. It's like you've stripped me of my humanity and made me this killing machine, and now you're stripping me of that as well. They're just devoid of purpose. And it's the whole thing with Todd's character is the fact that, he's on this sort of waste planet, and he's, for the very first time, he's having to interact with the people he's been supposedly fighting for, in all these sort of wars and conflicts and things, and sort of seeing a total different way of life for the first time. It's an interesting concept.
And struggling with all the emotions of everybody, because some of the things in the film are perhaps a bit too on the nose. Like, he literally ends up on the scrap heap, obsolete. That's it. Yeah. So he's obsolete, and so they just get rid of him and they chuck him on this.
They
put him on this waste planet, but he's just sort of broken inside. He's just sort of stunned that he could have failed in this way of, not defeated the new super soldiers who are sort of implied as replicants, although I never thought about that until I sort of read a few things and stuff. Yeah. So
they're genetically grown, aren't they, basically? Is the way it sort of comes across, I think, and it's sort of grown in a lab and enhanced.
Yeah, and so Todd, like all the guys, there's a key moment at the start of the film that says you must not speak unless spoken to by a superior officer. Yeah. So Todd doesn't say anything. So Kurt Russell has barely any lines, but the amount of dialogue he gets increases through the film when he starts to recognize some of the people that he's contacting with as superiors. The only way he can refer to them is to treat them as
a superior officer, or sir,
or whatever. And even the wife of the man, so the family that he ends up in the company of, the wife, he sort of treats her like his commanding officer, or something. He addresses her with that respect. Nothing to do with gender or anything, and there's early, it's such a great performance because it's physical, and it's imposing. But Kurt Russell is so expressive in his, you know, just his gentle mannerisms and you know, his eyes and stuff. So some of it's quite moving because you can see that he really wants to feel something, but he doesn't know how, and that kind of culminates at the end where he's not taken much of a step forward, but he has taken quite a significant step forward. So where he ends at the end of the film is like really shocking to the people around him, because they would have never in their, you know, they can't even comprehend where he's at, even though he's not changed with any great degree. But it's just lovely, I think, the whole...
It is, and you know, the way he inspires the you know, the other the remnants of his unit by giving them a new mission to do, you know, without even saying a word, and you know, it's really cool.
It's all nods and like little eye ticks and stuff, isn't it?
But there's one really, for me, it's like a really audience pleasing moment when. So, you know, these soldiers are attacking the commune and people are getting wiped out left, right and centre. And then, you know, sort of Todd's managed to sort of come back. And we're following Connie Nielsen's character as she's sort of getting these children up these stairs as soldiers are chasing them. And we sort of go to the soldier's point of view as he turns the corner and he starts seeing this line of kids, you know, as the camera sort of pans around and pans through this line of kids, and Connie Nielsen just stood there. You know, as if they're like deers in a headlight kind of thing. And then the camera keeps going, and then you see Todd stood there with a rocket launcher. You know, it's just like, brilliant. You know, that is really, really well done sort of little moment. I mean, the action scenes are really well done all the way through. The whole Rambo kind of thing where he's using his sort of camouflage and subterfuge tactics, you know, to take these guys out. Really well lit, really well filmed sort of sequences, you know, just really well done. As you say, it's you know, 60 million, and it's like, no, throw it into DTV.
Their losses are gained, you know. The classic moment in the movie, you get getting tooled up. Kind of scene, like the Rambo, Rambo Commando kind of bit where he gets ready and then she's like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I'm going to kill them all, sir. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's going to kick off into the final chapter. This is a variation on the Western Shane.
It's like The Mercenary, isn't it? It's Dominic Vandenberg's sort of setup as well.
You know,
sort of guy trying to redeem himself through violence, basically.
Yeah, I think the Mercenary probably was, you know, I don't know if it was directly sort of influenced by this film, but certainly would have been by probably Shane and that. But I mean, they are comparable, definitely. If you enjoyed the Mercenary recently, and you haven't seen this, you should definitely see this, and vice versa. You know, they're both very very different movies, but you've got that same sort of concept at heart. I haven't seen the new Rambo film yet. But I can only hope that the new Rambo film is even, you know, is in the same league as The Mercenary, because it's such a good film. As a digression there, but what more? You can't really say. Just go and watch it. It's just a fantastic science fiction action movie with great characters, great actors. I forgot to mention Jason Isaacs. Weasley baddie. Gary Busey's great. Yeah. He's fantastic. Sort of playing the opposite of his character in Under Siege as like a really. What's interesting in those characters is like they're very much towing the line, and you know they know that they're using these people who've been racing. But so you know the qualms, you know, they don't have any qualms about you know these guys getting killed or anything. You know that's what they're there for. They're the cannon fodder.
Gary Busey's character has. You know, he knows these guys' worth. You know, and he's fought with them, or he's sent them into battle, and suddenly this weaselly whippersnapper has come along, going, no, your people are redundant now. You know, we've got these super soldiers who've got no combat experience whatsoever. They're going to be the future, sort of thing. And he's got a bit of a bit more of a sort of seasoned sort of head on his shoulders, going,
yeah, you know, they're going to get. But none of them are good. But it's sort of they have their sort of like against the two of them. Very much a sort of dark. So none of them are good. It's only really the innocents who are on the on the planet, is sort of just trying to live a quiet life, or whatever. And how they ended up there, I don't know, but I can't remember.
I think their spaceship crashed. I think they mentioned they crash landed on the planet.
Oh yeah. But
they were meant to be going to colonize somewhere else.
I wasn't a big fan of the little boy, I'll be honest.
Actually, he did grow on me. I mean, I'm usually the last person to like kids in movies. But I kind of liked him, and the whole bit with the snake I thought was really well done, especially when Todd is trying to teach him how to kill it.
Which was real snakes, apparently, that they used, real poisonous snakes.
I thought that was really good, and the payoff of that scene was very good as well.
Well, that's the turning point in the story, isn't it? Mm. So it's like what leads him to then go, Sean Pertwee's characters, to go out and seek him out and realising that, you know, they need to help him a bit more. I liked that the boy and Todd are, you know, intentionally drawn as two sides of the same coin, basically.
He's mute, isn't he? The kid's mute.
The kid's mute. Todd is basically mute. So the boy is essentially...
He sees
a lot of himself. It's a lot of who he is. He's kind of got arrested development because he's never grown up. He's seen the boy's mother and stuff. You know, he's looking at a beautiful woman. It's a new thing for him. He's been incredibly sheltered in a way. You know, he's grown up in violence, but he seems to have had nothing to do with any other aspects of, you know, real life or you know, puberty or, you know, anything like that. It's all completely suppressed.
It's a very sexist sort of society as well, isn't it? Because there's no sort of female sort of warriors within the ranks.
That's very interesting. Yeah, although one of the senior officers on the ship, you know, with Gary Busey, is a woman, so that's quite interesting.
I was almost going to be sympathetic to her until she came up with that line saying which turns out to Riley and says only soldiers get guns. And I'm thinking, okay, you're enjoying this sort of cruelty a bit too much. Basically, you know, it's not just you following orders, you're sort of reveling it a little bit. I was going to say, one final thing for me was the other sort of line of dialogue I really liked. It's when Connie Nielsen sort of turned around to Todd and saying, you know, we'll fight, we're not cowards, you know, tell us what to do, we'll fight. Soldiers deserve soldiers.
Which, again, I thought
was just a really good, you know, very concise line. But it sort of said so much, you know, about his. No, they deserve respect, you know, basically. So I'm not going to send you into battle.
Yeah, it's not about them. It's not about the people he's trying to protect. He's not trying to protect them. He thinks his colleagues or whatever deserve better. He can offer that to them. Oh, it's just brilliant. I love the big trucks and all that. I mean, there is the whole silly thing of they've dumped him on this waste planet or whatever, and then all of a sudden there's the plot contrivance of, oh, we're going to go and clear this planet now. And they all end up down there completely coincidentally with all the same people.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? Because I thought that going into the film, because, you know, it has been decades since I've seen it. But... you know, it's not them that dumped the bodies. They actually sort of passed it on to some sort of, you know, waste disposal ship, which then dumped it off of the planet. So they had no idea where he was ending up.
It is a big coincidence. It also that reminded me of RoboCop 3, actually.
I never saw it.
You never saw RoboCop? Because that's kind of OCP, are trying to clear out Detroit, and they're trying to kick people out of their homes. And
so I think I saw
RoboCop kind of goes rogue and defends the people and stuff.
I remember the just sort of jetpack scene.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not watching this. Not seriously. Yeah. Anyway.
Soldier.
Paul W.S. Anderson, as he is now known. Because the guy who... Oh, what was the name of the guy I'm thinking of? The film with Rufus Sewell and Kiefer Sutherland.
Dark City.
Dark City. That's a different Paul Anderson, isn't it?
That wasn't Paul Anderson. That was Alex Proyas.
Alex Proyas. Yeah, I'm going to delete this. Forget I mentioned it. Yeah, I always get the, I used to get the two guys mixed up. But yeah, because Alex Proyas is the one who did The Crow, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Okay, just for my edification.
So Salt, if I just sort of come back in. So Soldier wasn't a hit at all. Paul Anderson didn't actually make another big movie for a few years after this. And I think we've got inferior films, I think, to a large degree since then. I think Soldier is one of, if not the best film that he's made in his career. You know, it's certainly streets ahead of stuff like Death Race and,
yeah,
I think Resident Evil was the film that he made after this, which I did like. I do like Resident Evil.
Resident Evil's got a great cast.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah, but this Evil series as a whole was sort of in and out. So some highlights and low points.
But yeah, I have to say, there's nothing really more I want to say apart from, no, if you haven't seen it, go and see it. Watch Soldier.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to dig it out on Netflix or Prime or something.
Or pick up a second-hand DVD copy.
Yeah. Knocking around. Yeah, that is Soldier. Thank you for listening. That is the end of our show. As usual, links will be in the footnotes for the trailers and the shorts. If you like what we're listening to, if you like listening to what we're saying, when I get my words right, get in contact with us. Let us know how we're doing on Twitter and Facebook at the DTV Digest. Or you can get me on Mike at West UK, on Twitter, that is. Otherwise, tune in to our next episode, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments, and tune in again next time.